The title of the sermon today is God, Atheism, and the Evolution of Religion. This sermon is a very personal statement of my own beliefs about God and religion. A great thing about our Unitarian Universalist religion is the commitment to the freedom of the pulpit. The preacher can openly say whatever he or she believes without worrying about reactions to it, since everyone in the congregation knows that they are not obliged to agree. At the same time, the preacher hopes that the sermon will be helpful in some way, that maybe some of the ideas will be useful to at least part of the congregation. The traditional view of God, technically called theism, is that God is a mind without a body, a personal being capable of knowing what is happening in the world, even though he has no body, and thus no sense organs. God has a will in this view, that is, he wants some things to happen, and is even capable of causing miracles to happen, especially in answer to prayers, even though no one understands how he, as an immaterial being, could cause such things to happen. In my own religious development, the part of the traditional Christian view that seemed most central to me was a story about the resurrection of Jesus, 3 days after he died on the cross, killed by the Romans because he was defying their political authority by declaring that he was the king of the Jews. Whether such a miraculous event really occurred is critical to Christian beliefs. If such a resurrection didn't really happen, there would be no basis for believing that Jesus was God. There would also be considerable doubt about whether any of the miracles mentioned in the Bible really occurred, and whether there was any kind of life after death. My studying over a couple of years convinced me that there was no actual resurrection, even though some of the first disciples may have believed that there was. It is just very unlikely that any such event really occurred. The fact that Jesus is reported to have ascended into the sky and also to have said that he would soon return to meet the disciples only adds to the improbability. Since almost 2,000 years have passed, it seems that Jesus was wrong about returning soon. Once any basis for belief in the resurrection of Jesus is gone, there is no reason to believe in supernaturalistic parts of the Bible or the beliefs of Christianity generally, including the theistic view that there's a God who can perform miracles and cares about what happens to humans. Modern science makes it virtually impossible to believe that miracles occur. Purported miracles and purported evidence of life after death are regularly shown to be frauds. Also, there is now no longer any way to even conceive of a theistic God or of some kind of life after death. Can there be any kind of personal mind or consciousness without a brain? When we know about Alzheimer's and other sorts of things, can we really believe that there's a mind that doesn't have a brain? Before Copernicus, in the 16th century, and the notion that the Earth is just another planet going around the sun, it was widely believed for thousands of years that God and heaven exist up there, out beyond the fixed stars. But modern astronomy has left no place or time where a theistic God or a heaven with resurrected bodies could exist. Now, some thinkers in the Western world who took this new knowledge seriously were the 18th century Enlightenment philosophers in France and England called the deists. Deists saw that modern scientific findings made miracles impossible, and the belief in a God who can cause such miracles absurd. The only concept of God that was acceptable was a so-called watchmaker view of God, that God creates the universe and the laws of nature by which it operates, but then lets it run on its own. No one can even conceive of how there could be such supernaturally caused events as miracles. How could they happen? The only prayer for a deist that makes any sense is, "Thy will be done," because that's what's going to happen anyway. A good book presenting this deist point of view, which also was popular among many Unitarians, but a good book that tells you about this view is Thomas Paine's The Age of Reason. And if you're interested in the ideas of deism, I strongly recommend that book, The Age of Reason by Tom Paine. But the deists, in my view, still adopted the questionable view that there could somehow be a mind without a brain. Maybe at the beginning, before the universe gets going, but it's still a mind without a brain. Another kind of philosophical religious response to the new discoveries of science, one that didn't make that kind of mistake, was pantheism. This was the view of the famous philosopher Spinoza, 1632 to 1667, 17th century. For him, God and nature are two different terms that refer to the same thing. For pantheists, to say that something happens in accord with the will of God, and to say that something happens in accord with the laws of nature, are just two ways of saying the same thing. God is not something separate from the universe, but simply another way of talking about the universe and the forces operating in it. But as a matter of fact, pantheism had also been championed much earlier by the Stoic philosophers, even before Jesus and during the time of Jesus. In the Bible, the statement of Paul that in God we live and move and have our being is actually a quotation from the Stoic poet Aratus. And Paul was thoroughly familiar with the ideas of Stoicism. Stoics viewed Zeus, or God, as both the creator of the universe and as the world soul which moves and orders the world from within. In other words, this view sought to combine what we've just called the deistic view of God as creator with pantheism. The Stoics also believe that God is the source of rationality and morality in human beings. The notion of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man comes from the Stoics. It gets picked up by Paul and Christians, but it's basically a Stoic idea, because the Stoics believe there's a fragment of the divine in every human being, a spark of God within us. On that basis, they became the first philosophers to oppose slavery and to support the ideas of natural rights of each person and the natural law. Besides the ideas of theism, deism, and pantheism, We also need to mention the view that the word God or gods is used to refer to supernatural forces at work in the world. For example, in animism is the view that all things, even inanimate ones, like stones and trees, have a soul and thus can make things happen. It is a view found among most primitive peoples. It seems to come from the unsophisticated belief that all other things in the world have feelings and thoughts and a will, just as we humans do. I can feel things, I can do things, and all the other objects in the world also have that same kind of capability. That's animism. The familiar polytheism, many gods, of the ancient Greeks and Romans is really the personification of the forces of nature. Sailors would make sacrifices to Poseidon, the god of the forces of the ocean, to procure their safety on voyages. People would pray and sacrifice to Aphrodite, the goddess of erotic love, to cause the object of their affection to also fall in love with them. Come on, Aphrodite, I'll make sacrifices to you and you can help me. I think that we should, in this modern age, move beyond theism, deism, pantheism, animism, and polytheism to a different kind of concept of God that's appropriate for our modern scientific age, but which also does justice to our Judeo-Christian religious tradition. For me, God should be thought of as a force working for good. This definition takes account of the fact that whatever we worship should be something that unites both power and goodness. A God which never does anything, which has no power to do anything, is not worthy of worship. And a force which is not morally good is not worthy of admiration and worship. God must be both power and goodness. Now, the God of traditional Christianity is viewed as not only powerful and good, but as all-powerful and perfectly good. But in my view, that's going too far. It generates the greatest problem for religion called the problem of evil. If God is all-powerful and perfectly good, how can there be any evil in the world? Why don't we have a perfect world? If God is all-powerful, he should be able to eliminate the evil in the world. And if he is perfectly good, he should want to eliminate it. If he is also all-knowing, as Christians claim, then he must know how to eliminate the evil. But nevertheless, he doesn't. Theologians have made many attempts to deal with this problem of evil. The response that makes most sense to me, in view of the developments of modern science, is to stop viewing God as a conscious, personal being. We use the pronoun, so that's the way we tend to think, but we have to get rid of that view. And stop maintaining that God is all-powerful. Thus, I come to my definition of God as a force working for good, but with no idea that this force is all-powerful. Working with this definition of God, we can turn to the question of whether God exists. I would begin by noting that there's no doubt that people are often moved to help other people who are in distress. Think, for example, of all the help that was offered to the people in Haiti after the earthquake. If anyone asks, Where is God? My answer is wherever people are helping other people who need help. Is there anything more religious than that? And I think I'm not alone in that sentiment. To put this observation in the usual Christian terms, God is love. One could say, again using Christian terminology, that those who help others are moved by the Holy Spirit. When humans help one another, they are moved to do so by God, and thus we can know that God exists, this power working for good. But as God also exists outside of human beings, if not, this view could be called religious humanism. And I'm not opposed to using that term for the view that I'm putting forth. Call it religious humanism. That God, the power working for good, operates in human beings. But on the issue of whether there's any force working for good outside of human beings, on that I'm an agnostic. Maybe there is, and maybe there isn't. I just don't know. It seems at least possible that the evolution of life forms on Earth is not just a coincidence. People talk about a designer. And of course, Darwin has the idea of chance variation and natural selection. And the question is that adequate to explain what has happened? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe there is a force working for good outside of humans. On the other hand, to give you the other side of the picture, if we consider the vastness of the universe, then the evolution of life forms that we know here on Earth could just be a coincidence that seems to be somewhat miraculous just because we happen to be at the place in the huge universe where it seems to have occurred. So it's the personal perspective, and I see this happening, and I don't see it not happening in the rest of the universe, and that is not rational. Moving on, the issue of whether the view I'm espousing should be called atheistic is itself worth a comment, partly because it is also relevant to an issue of some interest to Unitarians, whether Thomas Jefferson was an atheist, an accusation which was brought against him when he was running for president in 1800. The word atheist is a prime example of a critically ambiguous word. One possible meaning of this word atheist is not a theist. A theist. Not a theist. That's from the great Greek derivation of the word. As already noted, a theist is a person who believes in a supernatural personal God who can perform miracles and thus change the course of the natural world. In this sense, a deist like Thomas Jefferson was an atheist. He was not a theist. My own view that God is a force working for good is also an atheist view in this sense. I am not a theist. But another possible meaning of atheist is a person who does not believe in any kind of God. In this sense, Jefferson was correct in arguing that it was inappropriate to label him an atheist, because he did believe in a deistic God. It would also be inappropriate to say that my view is an atheist view in this sense, because I am ready to use the word God to affirm that there is a force working for good, though possibly as is only within human beings. Let me add a word here about my own view of how religion has evolved. I think that religion begins with a worship of supernatural powers in order to help us in pursuit of our goals. For over a million years, humans were generally ignorant about why they got sick, or why the weather changed, or why some people prospered while others didn't. It was a mystery. They didn't know. So they hoped that the supernatural deities would help them get whatever it is that they wanted. And they thought that they could bribe the gods by making right offerings and sacrifices and prayers to them. God, help me. Now, it's interesting to me that modern science is on the way to giving humans everything that they once hoped the supernatural gods would give them. Health, prosperity, long life. As sometimes popularly expressed, especially with regard to the successes of modern medicine, we humans are now playing God, doing what was previously thought to be the work of supernatural forces. A great shift in religion occurred with Zoroastrianism, which viewed their god Ahura Mazda as concerned about moral behavior. The gods and goddesses of the gods of the Greeks and Romans didn't care one bit about morality. In fact, they themselves were about as immoral as you could be. But Zoroastrianism says we've got a god, Ahura Mazda, who is concerned about morality. They said good behavior would be rewarded and bad behavior would be punished, not only by the earthly rulers, but also by Ahura Mazda. In fact, it was the Zoroastrians who developed the ideas of heaven and hell and the day of judgment. Those are Zoroastrian ideas to support the idea that such rewards and punishments could come in the afterlife as well as in this life. But the key thing was that God was concerned about morality. Now, the Jewish prophets went a step further. The Jewish prophets advanced the idea that their God, Yahweh, was more interested in moral behavior than anything else. The goodness of God for the Jewish prophets became as important as his power. Now, as I already said, Christians tended to think that God must be all-powerful as well as completely good. And we need to look at why they thought that way. Because they needed some kind of assurance that good would prevail in the end, that there would be hope in otherwise hopeless situations. In fact, the famous German philosopher Immanuel Kant argued that people needed the assurance that the universe itself was a moral universe, or they would ask, why should I be moral? Why should I sacrifice my self-interest if the universe itself is indifferent to morality? Why be moral in an amoral universe? If there's no guarantee that goodness and justice will ultimately prevail, then why should I be moral? This is Kant's moral argument for the existence of God. But I think Kant is mistaken. I think we humans can decide that we will be morally good, even if the universe ultimately is not. Even if it's a tale told by an idiot. For me, that is the core of religious faith. Doing right what's right just because it's right. I'm going to do what seems right regardless of the consequences for myself or what others may think. Think back to the reading from Key Largo. Let the power of goodness live through me, even if the universe is amoral. Let me work with God, whether the goodness will ultimately prevail or not. When I am moved to work for good, to help others, to improve the human situation, I feel that I am allowing God, a force working for good, to also work through me. This viewpoint is more appropriate than being proud, oh, I have really done something good. Why? Because ultimately, I have been shaped to be however morally good I happen to be by forces outside of myself. I didn't do that on my own. Therefore, I can freely and wholeheartedly sing, as we are going to sing now. Spirit of love, come unto me. Sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion. Roots hold me close. Wings set me free. Spirit of love, come to me. Come to me.